World Home Loan Bank and Credit Suisse. And again, how much time would you like to reserve?
2 minutes, please, Your Honor. Whether there is a requirement to prove reliance under the WSSA really boils down to two questions. One, what did the legislature have in mind when it enacted the WSSA? And two, what did the Washington Supreme Court intend when it decided Hines? Let me turn to each in turn. What did the legislature intend when it enacted the WSSA in 1959? As Judge Cox and I were discussing in the previous argument, the starting point is the language of the statute, and the statute says nothing about reliance or any other form of the common law elements of fraud. As I mentioned before, the appellees try to convince the court to insert a reliance requirement because they say that the language of the WSSA is the same as the language of 10b-5. As I mentioned before, that language was construed to include a reliance requirement only by two far-flung federal district courts before the Washington legislature enacted the statute. So it cannot be...
Counsel, let me ask you a question.
Of course.
I think I understand your argument. This court in Stewart held that reliance is a requirement. At least that's the way I read the case. The state Supreme Court denied review of that case because there was a petition for review. It seems to me that if there was anything substantially off base in that decision, the Supreme Court would have accepted review, and it didn't. What do you do with that in terms of your discussion about what the Supreme Court says about the reliance requirement?
Your Honor, I'm not a Washington lawyer. I'm not familiar with the practices of the Washington Supreme Court in explaining or not explaining its reasons for accepting or denying review.
It doesn't explain its reasons. So, I'm just saying that it denied review in Stewart, and I think in Stewart that was a holding.
So the blunt answer is that I have no answer to Your Honor's question because I'm not qualified to answer it. I do have comments about what the Supreme Court must have intended in Hines, which I'll reach in just a moment.
Okay, sure.
We talked before about the very important decision in Kittleson, which explained the difference between the statutory structure in Washington and the statutory structure in federal law, namely the absence in Washington of any equivalent to the narrowing of Section 10B to include offenses that involve only scienter.
And we've heard the argument that scienter is not the same as reliance.
Well, Your Honor, the defendants... In federal court, the common law elements come and go together. If scienter is required, then so are all of the other common law elements. The Washington Supreme Court has rejected many common law elements, for example, loss causation, and the defendants give no reason why, unlike the federal courts, the Washington Supreme Court would differentiate between common law requirements. The background of the law for both the legislature and the Washington Supreme Court is that there was a body of strict liability law under Section 12A2, and there was a body of fraud law under Section 10B. The latter had none of the common law requirements. The former had none, and the latter had all. The defendants do not explain why any court, federal courts haven't done this, so why would the Washington courts pick and choose among the common law elements? The statutory scheme is either that they apply or that they don't. Another problem with the defendant's, if you will, clone of 10b-5 argument, is that it proves way, way, way too much. If the defendants were correct that the Washington legislature intended the WSSA to mimic Rule 10b-5, they are committed to the proposition that the legislature intended to abolish the strict liability remedy of Section 12A2 of the 1933 Act and of the Uniform Securities Act. The Washington Supreme Court has held many, many times that the WSSA was based on Section 12A2, which is a strict liability remedy, and on the Uniform Securities Act, which is also a strict liability remedy. So what the defendants are asking this court to believe is that when the Washington legislature enacted the WSSA, it intended to deprive the citizens of Washington of the entire range of strict liability remedies that's available to all citizens under federal law, and that the vast majority of states make available to their citizens under their state blue sky laws. It is just inconceivable that the Washington legislature, which enacted a statute that's to be liberally construed to protect investors, would have deprived Washington investors of an entire body of remedies that had existed in federal and state law for years and years. Let me now turn to Hines.
But before you get there, let me just, I think the record amply demonstrate this. In this case, the purchase was made before the filing with the SEC. So if there is a reliance requirement, you have no case.
That's true, Your
Honor. Okay, thanks.
I would just add, Credit Suisse concedes that the PROSUP was used in connection with the sale, even though it was filed after, and the statute requires only that it be in connection with. If the court inserts a reliance requirement, then I agree we would be unable to satisfy.
Okay, thanks.
There are three reasons, I think, why the Washington Supreme Court did not intend in Hines to hold that reliance is required. First, all parties agree that the issue is not before the court. The investor plaintiffs in Hines did not dispute that they had to prove reliance, and as we demonstrated in our reply brief when reviewing the briefing, that issue is simply never briefed to the Washington Supreme Court. So a question on which the parties agree is not one that is presented to the court for a decision. Moreover, the Washington Supreme Court does not make extremely important decisions of law in one sentence. The court has a lengthy history in each of its 10 decisions under the Washington State Securities Act of providing extensive analysis of its reasoning, and it is, again, almost unimaginable that a court with a tradition of such scholarly opinions would intend to make a major change in the law in one sentence completely unexplained. Second, the Washington Supreme Court takes very seriously the mandate of RCW 21.20.900 that the law of Washington should be construed to make it uniform with the law of other states. When Hines was decided, two state Supreme Courts had already decided that reliance was not required. When GoToNet was decided, five more had decided that, and since then, two more. If the Supreme Court in either Hines or GoToNet intended to depart from the rulings of its sister Supreme Courts, then its deference to the section of RCW that I just mentioned would have prompted it at least to give some explanation of why it was putting Washington in a minority of one in an anti-investor position. And finally, the most fundamental principle of the Washington State Supreme Court's jurisprudence on the WSSA is that it's to be liberally construed to protect investors. There is no doubt that the reliance requirement is bad for investors, as the judgment below amply illustrates. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Richard Clary for the Credit Suisse defendants. Let me begin by saying the one thing that I do agree with Mr. Grace on is that the record is perfectly clear that there was no reliance on the PROSUPs in connection with the purchase of these two certificates. So if there is a requirement of reliance, summary judgment was properly granted. As to whether or not there is a requirement of reliance, that frankly has been the law in the state of Washington for almost 50 years. Yes, there's the Hines opinion from the Washington Supreme Court specifically identifying reliance as a critical element along with material misrepresentation. There are also this court's decisions in Stewart and Guarino from 2004, Hellenius in 2005, Future Select in 2013, to go back all the way to 1970, there was Sherman versus Baker in the Court of Appeals for Division II. There is a long line of authority saying reliance is an element on liability. There are no cases saying otherwise. No Washington State Court cases, no federal court cases interpreting the WSSA, no other jurisdictions' cases interpreting the WSSA. Uniformity throughout that reliance is an element. Quite frankly, there is no reason to revisit that issue now. On the question of whether Hines is just dicta, I respectfully suggest that it is not. First of all, contrary to what Mr. Gray said, the court actually has three different references to reliance in its opinion in Hines. It also then, after making those pronouncements, applied the standard of the law that it had just announced to the findings in the trial court and concluded that the elements had been sufficiently satisfied to affirm the judgment below. So not only did it pronounce the law, but it also applied the law.
Even if it was properly characterized as dicta, does that matter?
Frankly, no, Your Honor. And the reason it doesn't matter is no one could characterize Sherman or Guarino or any of this court's decisions as dicta. They all turned on the precise question of reliance and clearly made reliance part of the law of the WSSA. It is also a correct decision. My view of the WSSA is a little different from Mr. Grayson. To go back to 1959 when the legislature enacted the WSSA, the federal system had two statutes, the 33 Act, which he characterized as strict liability, I more or less agree with that, and the 34 Act. The Uniform Securities Act, therefore, also had two sections. It had a section that tracked the 34 Act, which is section 101, and it had a section that tracked the 33 Act, which was section 410. And different state legislatures looked at the Uniform Securities Act and enacted different parts. The Washington legislature decided to enact for liability, which is the portion we're talking about today, the part that was modeled on Rule 10b-5, the part that came out of the 34 Act and that is modeled on Section 101 of the Uniform Act. The Washington State's legislature then decided that for the remedy stage, they would actually use the remedy portion that was modeled on the 33 Act. But in order to get to the remedy phase, you must find a violation and liability, which takes you back to Rule 10b-5. And that's why you see various courts, including the Washington Supreme Court, sometimes saying, look to the 34 Act or Rule 10b-5 in particular, and sometimes saying, look to the 33 Act and Section 12, because it depends on which part you're on. That's why the Supreme Court of Washington said there's no loss causation. The reason there's no loss causation is because that comes from the remedy section of the WSSA, not the liability provision. And in the remedy section, the legislature decided to use rescission. And if you're using rescission as the measure of damages, loss causation is not part of that calculus. As for Kittleson and Sienter, I actually don't think Kittleson helps the Federal Home Loan Bank at all. Kittleson clearly said this is the statute was intended to embrace 10b-5 itself, not Section 10b of the 34 Act, but 10b-5 itself. 10b-5 itself already was interpreted as requiring reliance. The question on Sienter was, should the Washington State Supreme Court follow Ernst & Ernst v. Hockfelder, which it said we're going to include Sienter as an element? One thing that had happened between Ernst & Ernst and Hockfelder and when the Supreme Court decided Kittleson was that the Washington legislature, in fact, amended the statute. It amended the remedies section of the statute to remove the references to fraud and manipulation precisely to eliminate the argument that had prevailed in Ernst & Ernst v. Hochfelder. Now, the Kittleson court didn't specifically address the amendment, but it was already on the books as eliminating that language when the Supreme Court was addressing issues in Kittleson. Then when the Supreme Court is addressing the actual reliance issue and what type of causation is required when you get to Hines, they're again looking at 10b-5 as the model, because that's what was chosen by the legislature for liability. And again, they clarify at the request of the parties, is it loss causation, is it transaction causation, which is reliance, or is it both? And they say you must prove reliance, and you don't have to prove loss causation. Now, that's all consistent with interpreting the intent of the legislature as to liability, that they wanted to incorporate reliance. And they have had 50 years to say otherwise if they didn't agree with this court's interpretation or the Washington State Supreme Court's determination. And they have been silent for 50 years, which is long enough under Washington Supreme Court analysis to be acquiescence or approval of the court's interpretations of the elements. In terms of Mr. Grace referenced the policy of broadly construing the act to protect investors. That language appears in a lot of opinions in Washington state courts.
Well, the prospectus is not intended as an insurance policy. I think you would agree.
I agree. And the Supreme Court of the United States has said one of the reasons you need reliance is because you don't want to turn this into an insurance policy for investors. So it's, yes, there's a broad policy to construe the WSSA liberally for those investors entitled to its protections, but there's a threshold you have to cross to be entitled, and that is you have to prove that there's a material misstatement and that you relied on it. And in fact, that language about the broad policy appears in opinion after opinion that then applies the requirement of reliance. That language is in Future Select. It's in Guarino. It's in Stewart. It's in Hellenius. It's in Hines. So that policy doesn't change the analysis that you still need reliance.
And by the time the court issued its opinion in Hines, had the U.S. Supreme Court started weighing in on the on reliance being an element of 10b-5?
Yes. Reliance, frankly, has always been an element in 10b-5, but it was well established by the time of the Hines decision.
Well, it's by court interpretation.
Yes.
And so we've heard the argument that in 1959 we only had two federal district courts, I think, or federal
I haven't gone back to check that, so I don't – I
But believe, without regard to that, by the time of Hines, we had Supreme Court cases clearly saying reliance is an element.
Yes, Your Honor. The last thing I would say is relates to RCW 2120-900, which Mr. Grace referenced, which talks about uniformity. It actually has two pieces. You should be uniform with the state courts that have adopted the Uniform Act, and you should coordinate your guidance with the federal regulation. The federal regulation in this case is 10b-5, and that is exactly what the Washington courts have said. So to now remove reliance would be to undo and to violate that portion of the statute. You can't make the state law uniform on reliance across the states because the states are all over the map. Even our Home Loan Bank concedes that there are six states that flat out require reliance. So there is no uniformity on the state side, but there is uniformity on the federal side. So with a statute that says you have to be faithful to both, the only one you can be faithful to is the federal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Three quick points in reply, Your Honors. Mr. Clary emphasized that the WSSA is modeled on section on 10b-5 and not 12a-2. As we pointed out in our brief, the language of subdivision 2 of section 430 is identical to 12A2. And the reason why this state Washington legislature did not repeat them in two places is because unlike 12A2, unlike the 34 Act, which provides no private right of action for violation of the anti-fraud rules, the Washington legislature expanded the remedies available to Washington investors by giving them the right to sue for all violations of the securities laws, including the counterpart to 12A2. So the fact that the language happens to be the same really proves nothing, because 10b-5 was modeled on 12A2, and the language of 12A2 and the Uniform Securities Act is carried forward into Subdivision 2. Judge Cox asked why the court would revisit this, and I think the answer is because it can. The statement in Hines was dictum. This court is free to differ with previous panels of the same court, and the net effect of Hines and its inadvertent progeny is that Washington is now allied with a very small minority of anti-investor states. It is in disagreement with the Supreme Court of every other state that's looked at this.
But why does that matter if our query is what the Washington State Legislature intended?
Because the Washington State Legislature intended to provide a very generous remedy for the citizens of Washington, and the logic of the defendant's position is that all it provided was an analog to the fraud cause of action and stripped away the entire strict liability action. That is not a plausible interpretation of this legislature's intent.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel.